Okay, so you're one of the best improvisers in the podcast game. And so we thought it would be fun if you and I played an improv game. So I looked some up, and I want to try this one where we speak only in questions.
I'm game. Let's do it.
Okay. So, wait, can you start it? Should I start it?
You start it. How dare you?
Oh, my God. Being a bad host. Oh, my God. Okay. Beautiful weather outside today, isn't it?
You think so, huh?
I mean, could you ask for bluer skies?
What good would it do?
Has anything for me ever been more difficult?
How should I know?
The next question I have is literally, how soon can I stop?
This experiment was a success.
A success? Yes. How was it a success? I didn't die.
Won't you tell me? Oh, are we still doing it? I don't know where we were.
From Gimlet Media, this is Sampler. I'm your host, Brittany Luce, and that much, much, much better improviser you just heard with me is our guest for this episode, the truly versatile Paul F. Tompkins. So Paul is one of the funniest and most prolific people in the world of podcasting. Like, I mean, this guy's done like dozens of shows in between his like television and movie projects. Like, he's done Comedy Bang Bang at least 10 million times. He's even had multiple podcasts of his own, from the Dead Authors podcast, which you heard in the very first episode of Sampler, to the Pod F. Tomcast, to Paul's most recent show, the heavily improvised Spontaneous Nation. So part of the reason why Paul has found himself in like almost every nook and cranny of the podcast world over the past decade or so is his ability to just kind of show up and take a conversation in places that nobody ever thought it would go. Let me play you guys a clip of Paul pretending to be the famed Broadway composer Andrew Lloyd Webber performing a rap based on one of his most famous musicals.
Opening song to Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh my goodness, here we go.
Yes, here we go. I'm about to drop some religion on all you Oedipus Rexes. Well, my name is Jesus Christ, and I'm here to say it's fun to rap in a spiritually ambiguous way. Got a best mate. Name of Judas had occasion recently to say to him, "You despicable swine, you betray me to the feds. See if I ever turn your stones to breads. I'm just a young G from Nazareth. Now some frontin' Pharisees wish to put me to death. And for what? For befriending a prostitute? Or for giving evil temple money lenders the boot? All I'm trying to do is rap to folks about love and to question the design of our God above. Now it's crucifixion time, so I've got to jet. Buy a Loudon Wainwright album, haven't got the blues yet."
I do have to say it spoils the plot a little bit.
What, the bit about the crucifixion?
I have a hard enough time getting in front of a microphone every week just as myself. How the hell does this guy perform at least weekly as all of these different characters while making up entirely fictional stories? I absolutely just had to get him in the Sampler studio and learn more about his crazy ways. Paul F. Tompkins, welcome to Sampler.
Thank you for having me, Brittany.
It's been said that you are like the mayor of podcasting.
Yes. Somebody told me recently that I am approaching 10,000 hours of podcasting.
Wait, that means that you're like Lil Wayne. because he wasn't that great when he first started out, and he was like 15. And then after about 10,000 hours, he just recorded all the time, and then he just got way better.
There you go. And I'm almost good at this.
Yes. I mean, I think you're pretty good at it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, basically, I mean, you've been doing this for like you haven't just like done so many shows or recorded so many hours. You've also been a part of podcasting for a long time.
Yeah, I guested on a bunch of podcasts before I even created my own. I was really intrigued by the form pretty quickly. And a big turning point, the biggest turning point for me probably was Comedy Bang Bang. My friend Scott Aukerman was hosting the show. He was hosting a live show in Los Angeles that was a sort of stand-up and character mm-hmm. showcase, and then started doing it on the radio, and then the station folded, and he started doing it as a podcast. And I was living in New York at the time for a job. I remember him calling me up and asking me if I wanted to phone in to the show. And he said, and you know, you could be anything. You could be yourself or you could be a character.
What was the first character that you showed up as?
I think it was Ice-T. I think it was Ice-T. And I think it was, there was a running gag where Ice-T was starting these businesses that all had unfortunate names.
I took a big hit on my first business venture, which was Iced Tea Lemonade, which was a an alcoholic soft drink I tried to market. Which, and I didn't understand. I didn't think ahead that the name Iced Tea Lemonade would not conjure up a hard lemonade made by me, Iced Tea.
Everyone just thought it was an Arnold Palmer.
Yeah. But it was like, I wish I had thought to make up a drink that's named after me in the first place. I would have just called it that.
Yeah.
And I had,
seems like Iced Teas would have worked better.
So anyway, then I had this other idea for modular furniture in the style of IKEA called Ice Cubes. Then that was doubly confusing because people thought that I was marketing, you know, Ice Cubes, which is dumb. People just have them in the home already. But then also that I would be confused with rapper and actor.
Yeah, the rapper and actor Ice Cube. People thought that was you instead of Ice-T.
You know, you're a white guy, and
yes,
you're impersonating this black man who is, you know, like a famous rapper, but like you do such a good job impersonating him in this way that's not disrespectful. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like something that me as a listener, I don't have to like pause. I don't have to like groan. I don't have to roll my eyes.
Right.
Ice-T found out about your impression of him.
Yeah.
And you were actually on his podcast, Ice-T : Final Level.
Ello?
Yeah, hi. I'd like to speak to Paul Tompkin, please.
this is me.
Hi, this is Ice-T. How you doing?
Ice-T, I'm very well. How are you?
Before we actually get this conversation started and stuff, I wanted to know from one professional to a comic, you know, where you were going with Ice-T stuff. Could you do a little, like, sample and stuff so I could hear what you sound like?
this is the moment that I dreaded.
I understand that, but I really want to hear this. I want to hear this from you, because I really want to, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In my universe, you are a guy who's very into specifically science fiction and then some fantasy. Like, you make it very clear that it's like not a lot of stuff. There's a little bit of overlap. So like if you were pitching a movie, it would be, okay, so it's like this guy, the vampire, but then he's also part cyborg. So he's got like 99% vampire, and then he's got one robot foot. So that makes him able to walk around in the daylight.
Right. Yeah, I see where you're going with that part, but I want to hear the Ice-T from you.
No, I just did it.
That was
I swear to God, that was it.
Oh, my God, that was terrible. Oh, my God.
Please walk me through how you felt.
Well, at first I was very excited.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, contacted through my agents. Hey, Ice-T would like to have you on his podcast. I'd like to talk to you. And I was like, oh, this is great. I love that he's a good sport. And so I get off the phone and I think, wow, that was crazy, you know. Then the next day, it was at a comedy festival in downtown LA.
Yeah.
And I run into this guy, says, hey, thanks for doing our show yesterday. I'm the producer. We, yeah. You know, emailed. And I said, oh, thanks for having me. He was really cool. And he goes, it wasn't him. It was a prank. And he said, are you mad? I'm sorry. And I said, no, not mad. It was just kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
You know? And then later, like, as I thought about it, like, Oh, that's embarrassing. Like, because I totally thought it was Ice-T. This guy does a great Ice-T impression.
It's very good.
And so then I listened to the episode, and then Ice-T was so funny talking about it and was so, like, loved that this happened and was such a good sport about all of it that I was like, oh, fine. I'm glad that it happened.
This guy named Rockwell, who can actually do my voice pretty well, called up Paul F. Tompkins and had Paul F. Tompkins thinking he was talking to me. But apparently Paul F. Tompkins does an impersonation of me. So there you got two fake Ice-T's talking to each other. You know, they say that, you know, when people impersonate you.
Mockery is the best form of flattery.
And I look at that as flattery.
If Ice-T is happy, I'm happy. That's how I approach all things.
Isn't it great that you're in a place to say that about your professional life? If Ice-T is happy.
If Ice-T is happy, I'm happy.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
So you obviously do a great Ice-T impersonation, but you also do a lot of other people too. Is there any character that you do that's like a favorite?
It's tough because they're all people that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a thing for Vulture recently and after the passing of Gary Marshall.
Mm-hmm. The guy who directed like Happy Days, Pretty Woman.
Yeah. And it was something I never thought about. And I realized in the writing of it, as I'm wiping away tears, as I'm sitting at the airport gate, like before I flew here, I'm writing this thing. And I got it affected me more than I thought it would. As I'm like writing my thoughts about this man that I met one time, you know, very briefly. And I realized, wow, this guy, you know, contributed so much of the entertainment of my childhood, like had a profound impact on me in a way that I'd never really thought about intellectualized until now.
Let's actually hear a little bit of your Gary Marshall impression on Comedy Bang Bang.
Yes, I directed Pretty Woman. I think nobody wanted to. They said, hey, Happy Days. That's what they called me. It's insulting, but I took it as a compliment because it was a successful show. They said, hey, Happy Days. They threw the script. It hit me in the chest and fell on the ground.
And they made you pick it up?
No, I picked it up of my own volition. Nobody makes Gary Marshall. But that's my name, by the way. I don't know if my name was said.
So, yeah, we should say.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Gary Marshall.
Gary Marshall is here.
Thank you for your applause.
I realized, like, imitating him felt in a weird way like spending time with that person, like spending time with him, you know, because I'm working very hard to capture his essence and how he sounds, how he expresses himself, how he would react to things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to react as myself. I'm trying to react as this character,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm very protective of this character because it's a real person that I have an admiration for.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, Paul's going to tell us what he thinks about lazy comedy. Welcome back to Sampler. I'm here with my guest, actor, comedian, noted podcaster, Paul F. Tompkins, a.k.a. the mayor of podcasting, who is also known for his character work and impersonations. And you know, I have to say, you just seem like you're having so much fun when you're playing these people.
It's a lot of fun. And it came to me relatively late in my career. I did not start out as a character guy. And even though I had done sketch and everything, I just never was attuned to that. And the thing that probably brought that into my life was a show called Best Week Ever on VH1. And I was the host of that show for a year. And a lot of times that required me playing characters. You know, mm-hmm. we would review the week in pop culture. We'd have clips from TV shows. And so sometimes rather than just do a traditional joke, I would act something out, be a character. And that was where I first did Andrew Lloyd Webber, which became a standard character of mine. Cake Boss, which became a standard character. Ice-T was the first time I did Ice-T.
That was the first time you did Ice-T.
Yeah. And I always did voices when I was a kid and everything, but it was not a part of my comedy. And so it was podcasting that really made me reconsider that and embrace it in a way that I just never had before. And that led me to improv and led me to start an improvisation podcast of my own.
It is called Spontaneanation.
It is an improv-based podcast, which means I'm doing the opposite of what I've always done, which is do something extremely produced that takes a long time and a lot of anguish. And I'm doing something that's all in the moment and fun with some of the best fun in the moment people around. We take you now to the underwear department at Macy's.
Dad, why couldn't Mom come with me?
Well, she's very busy, and you know, your mother does a lot of stuff around the house that I can't do. I don't know how to wash a dish. I've never known. It's very difficult.
Do you need any help?
Oh, look at this woman. Yes, hello. My daughter here would like to buy some.
Just say it.
I don't. Please, this is your mother's department.
Dainty under things?
Yes, that's exactly
panties.
Right.
Panties. Just say the word panties. I had a growth spurt and I need panties.
Yes, my daughter, you see, is she's 12 years old.
Well,
she's...
come down this aisle. It's very thin. You might brush against all the panties as you go down here.
Honey, I think maybe you better just go down that aisle. Follow this obvious woman down the aisle yourself.
Dad, it's just satin and lace. Stop being a cunt.
Stop saying it, honey. Please, please.
Fine. Now,
please take my daughter Megan to the secret places that you
we
women go to.
We have a policy that you have to come with us.
That's a weird policy.
It's
why?
It's legal stuff.
Oh, well.
It was exciting to be discovering a new thing and exciting to be learning a new thing and to be able to learn on the job, you know, surround myself with good people so that in the room where we're all improvising, I always make sure that I am the weakest link, you know, so that everyone around me is a solid improviser who's been doing this for years and really funny people so that if anyone's going to be weak, it's going to be me. And then people will forgive me because the other people are so good.
I just love this attitude of generosity that you have, not just for like the people that you're performing with on your show, not just for your guests, but as a listener, like I feel like you have it for your audience. You really tend to steer clear of like stereotypes or offensive jokes. And you've even said like in other interviews that like minding political correctness, like being a politically correct comedian keeps your comedy fresher.
Mm-hmm.
How did you arrive at that?
You know, I started going to therapy because of a bad relationship that ended in 2002. My therapist is a woman, and so I was exposed to, she just, like, so matter-of-factly and thoughtfully would show me other points of view. And so I remember having an argument with two female friends of mine. We had seen the movie Election. The Alexander Payne, right?
From, I think so, yeah, with Reese Witherspoon
years ago,
and Chris
yeah.
Klein. And, yeah.
And my female friends were saying, I thought that movie was kind of sexist. And I liked the movie. And so I was trying to argue that it was not sexist. So I'm trying to argue to two women that they were seeing this incorrectly.
Yeah.
And I was bothered that they were sort of it seemed like they were ganging up on me.
Yeah.
And so I share the story, and my therapist said, well, you know, for them, they have a different experience of this movie than you do. Because they're women and you're a man. So they're going to see this differently. And so they're not trying to tell you that you're a bad person for liking this movie. They're just trying to tell you this was their experience. And I come back to that exchange so often because it's the key to everything. If you want to understand what's going on with our country right now and why people are so angry and all that, it's because no one wants to feel bad.
Yeah.
They don't want to feel that they thought incorrectly or evilly or they were inconsiderate or whatever. It's a very, to me, a very childish worldview to be talking about being anti-PC and that we need to be more anti-PC. It seems very emotionally stunted, you know?
I think it makes for like lazy comedy. Like one of the things—
1,000%. The whole anti-PC thing really just means I don't want to be called on my shit. I don't want to have to think differently. I don't want to have to rewrite this bit because it already gets laughs, mm-hmm. you know? It just became like a monumental, not just professional laziness, but a moral laziness that said, you're too worried about having to think about your actions and how they might affect other people, about hurting someone's feelings. And you also don't want to seem uncool to the people that you think are cool.
How do you manage that as a host? When you're bringing in people who have a variety of different approaches, they yeah. have a variety of different backgrounds, different personal limitations.
Absolutely.
How do you account for that in a group?
Yeah, that's the challenging part of it, honestly. For me, the fine line is, this is supposed to be an entertainment program. Mm-hmm. This is not supposed to be, hey, we're talking about current affairs and we're going to get down to brass tacks and really discover what is wrong with society today. So I leave the door open for the possibility that maybe I'll talk about social issues in a comedic way in the future, you mm-hmm. know, because my style has evolved over the years and maybe that's where I'm headed years down the line, yeah. you know.
You perform so many different roles on all of the different shows that you're featured on, you know, like you're not only a host, you also like are sometimes like the guest, sometimes you yourself. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the time you are playing all of these different characters. So like, how do you move between all of those four? And which one is your favorite?
I think I like hosting the most mm-hmm. because I genuinely like interviewing people. I really enjoy asking questions and I enjoy finding the common ground, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love when people are great storytellers and people that can surprise you. I had Nathan Lee Graham, who is a film and stage actor. Most people probably know him as Will Ferrell's assistant in Zoolander. Mm-hmm. He was somebody that you could ask him a question and he would always have a great answer and a really funny thing to say. The interview goes unexpected places and he was just delightful.
I did Priscilla, Queen of the Desert on Broadway. Mm-hmm. I played Misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. She was the Tina Turner role. I opened the show. It was on 12 minutes, a 12-minute opener at the Palace Theater where Judy Garland performed. And I was amazing. What I didn't know was that I'd have to be in the ensemble as well. Mm-hmm. And doing the ensemble work was a piece of shit. I was a cupcake at once. At one point, I was a cupcake. They sing, MacArthur Park is melting in the dark. And I come out in a cupcake outfit with all of my other friends. Nathan Lee Graham is a cupcake. Now, it's fine if I'm doing the comeback, which I did, mm-hmm. And I'm a cupcake, but not on the not at the palace.
What was the, was the cupcake costume hard to get
into?
Yeah,
it was hard to get into. We had wonderful dressers. Let me tell you something. The crew is amazing. The people I did the cupcakes with are amazing. But just personally, it was not a high point.
Were you able to mask your displeasure?
Yes, because of the lighting. Because of the lighting on the stage, it was all a dream sequence. And so I actually lied to people and told them that I wasn't a cupcake. But now everybody fucking knows.
Would your friends say, hey, were you in?
Right.
And then you would say,
no.
The key to hosting a thing is to assume that everyone you ever are going to talk to is an interesting person. Even if you have a prejudice thinking this is going to be boring, you have to trust that everyone has a story and it's just a matter of getting to those questions that unlock the interesting person inside what is perceived as a dull person.
Do you have like a go-to question?
Honestly, emotional questions, I think, are the best ones. When you ask someone how that made them feel, mm-hmm. if you can relate a thing like, oh, I felt this way when this happened when I was a kid or whatever, I find that that really gets people to open up.
That makes me think about a particular appearance that you had on a podcast, Mental Illness Happy Hour. Mm-hmm. So I've listened to the episode 3 times in the past week. And you talk about how, you know, you started going to therapy after this really difficult breakup. And I'm a huge fan of therapy, so I loved finding that out. But you also talked about how you used to kind of have like a bit of like a mean streak in your comedy. Like you were a little bitter. And therapy made you realize that you needed to change.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's actually hear a little bit of that now. It's you on Mental Illness Happy Hour talking to the host, Paul Gilmartin.
Would it be fair to say that you wouldn't be doing the comedy that you're doing right now were it not for therapy?
100%.
Okay.
As I improved my own life, my outlook, my art changed.
Yeah.
And for the better.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like, I realized through therapy, man, I have not been taking anything in my life as seriously as I should be taking it. I have been blinding myself with booze, checking out, as much as I can and telling myself who I am as opposed to finding out who I am. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And sometimes what we think is a disaster is the necessary path to what we want. It just has to circumvent through maybe hitting a bottom. The worst thing that could happen for us is for us to be given what it is that we're fantasizing about at the time that we're fantasizing about it, because we wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah. There's always something more that you're going to want. I went through a period of bitterness not that long ago where I was in a really dark place. It was all about, entering into middle age, getting into my 40s, where it's like, holy shit, time is going by so fast that all I can think about is I'm almost dead. I am almost dead. And where am I and what am I doing? I did not realize how great my life was. I couldn't see it. And I was trying to see it. You know what I mean? Like at this point, I am a married man. I'm a professional stand-up comedian. I'm having like a really good year financially from all these different things. I'm working on all these other projects that are towards my goal. But I was still at this point where everybody else was doing better than I was. I was not any closer to achieving this goal that I wanted to achieve. It was never going to happen. But really what it was about was mortality. It's that time is too short. It's never going to happen. And it's embarrassing that I can't provide for my wife better. It's embarrassing that I have fucked up my career with this dumb behavior in the past, that now I'm never going to be where I want to be, not even where I want to be, but to a point where I can breathe. It's always going to be like this. I'm always going to be on the fucking hustle. I'm always going to be traveling around. I'm always going to be packing that goddamn suitcase.
So crazy.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
Because I could tell you, Paul, from your as a peer of yours, and I know there are tons of other peers that feel the same way. We look at you and think, if I could only get to where, and that ladder, I think, never ends unless you can say, yeah, I'm happy to just be on this journey.
The ladder never ends because you're always building the fucking ladder.
Yeah.
You're always adding the rungs on there. Yeah. It's always you.
How have things changed since that conversation?
It goes back and forth. Living in Los Angeles, being in this weird little bubble of show business, because the whole town is about that.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes to keep perspective because no matter where you are, there's an idea around you that you should be somewhere else. That wherever you are, it's like, that's not good enough.
Yeah.
And so there are times where I can get down about not getting a certain job or something or not being considered for a certain job or something like that. But then it takes some doing sometimes to get back to a good, healthy perspective of I have a really good life and I am, employed doing this thing that I love to do. I'm having fun doing it. And the hours that I've spent in those rooms in front of microphones are some of the happiest hours of my life where it's just fun. And to be doing something with other people, to be working together, me and friends of mine who do comedy podcasts, they're people that write to us all the time saying, you guys help me do my job because I'm stuck at a desk all day and I'm looking at a monitor, and without these shows, I would go crazy. And it's like, you guys are my friends. That stuff, man, it really makes a difference. It really helps.
Is podcasting is it a tool for self-work for you in a way?
I mean, not consciously. I think that if you have a job that you love doing,
mm-hmm.
I think it can't help but be that. It is a thing where I can be having a bad day,
mm-hmm.
and then go and do that for an hour,
yeah.
and feel a lot better.
Yeah.
And it might not turn my day completely around, depending on whatever it is that's bothering me. But man, at least for an hour, I was having a good time,
yeah.
you know, and tomorrow's another day.
So, like, what do you hope for then in the future of the medium? And how do you see yourself fitting into that?
I hope there will always be a place for me in it. I hope that it continues to flourish. I hope that will always remain in the hands of the people. I do a show that's for a podcast network, and so I get paid to do that podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great, and I hope that that continues, and so that more people can make a living doing this.
Yeah.
But I hope, whether it's you know, the absence of some, you know, government regulation or people being squeezed out because they can't compete with podcast networks, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that people will always be able to make what they want to make.
Well, that's beautiful. It really was.
Thank you. I'm so
glad. You don't understand. I'm so glad that you came. You are like a cornerstone of this here industry. And I'm so honored that you came in here to talk with us today.
It was absolutely my pleasure, Brittany. Thank
with
you.
Us, with me. There's oh, it's just me.
The royal us.
Exactly. But thank you so much. This was great.
Of course. Probably John C. Reilly is probably the closest that I get to sounding like the actual person.
You have a John C. Reilly impression?
Yeah, sure.
Could we just hear just a little bit of that?
Hey, Brittany. Awesome to be here. Listen, thanks for having me on your show. I'm always happy to talk about podcasts, and I know there's a lot of people that think podcasts are awesome, and so it's cool to be here.
To recap the clips featured on the show today, the Andrew Lloyd Webber rap, Gary Marshall, and Ice-T impressions were from Comedy Bang Bang with Scott Aukerman. The prank phone call from an Ice-T impersonator was from the podcast Ice-T Final Level. Nathan Lee Graham's cupcake story was from Spontaneation. And Paul's commentary on growing older was from the podcast Mental Illness Happy Hour. Special thanks to Earwolf. This episode was produced by Kate Parkinson Morgan, Sarah Abdurrahman, Rose Reed, and myself. It was edited by Annie Rose Strasser and Peter Clowney. Our theme music was made by Mike Avellian, and our ad music was made by Mark Phillips. Additional music in the show was by Talkstar. The show was mixed by Haley Shaw and Bobby Lord. Sampler is a production of Gimlet Media.